Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the mighty 690 KGGF, and it's time for Greenside Up. And joining me this morning in studio is Jesse Gilmore. And Jesse, good morning. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Good to see you in studio today. And we'll have one of your compadres hopefully on here in a little bit as well. Since you're already in studio, we'll go ahead and get started here with Greenside Up and a few things that you did want to talk about. Before we get started on the Champion Tree Program and the Wild Edibles, K-State Garden Hour is still going on, correct?
Yeah, we are winding down. We'll probably be finishing up around the end of or middle of October, but we are still offering our hour-long garden webinars every Wednesday from 12 to 1. This week's topic will be specifically on garlic in Kansas and what varieties do particularly well here. Garlic is a surprisingly deep topic, so they will be able to get an hour's worth of talking out of garlic. And if you've ever wanted to try growing garlic, now is about the right time to start planting it and getting it for the winter preservation season.
All right. So again, that'll be what time today again?
At 12 to 1.
12 to 1. Okay. And just watch on the Facebook page, correct? So be able to do that. And also the Champion Tree Program is coming up as well, correct?
Yeah. So every state in the country has their own forest service. Some, like Kansas's, are a little less involved than others because we don't have a ton of forests in the state, but they are responsible for what's known as their Champion Tree Program. These are going to be the biggest of each tree in the state, and they separate it by species and they basically map it out. And then for each champion tree of each state, they're compared against other states to determine the national champions for trees. We actually had someone in Pittsburgh submit a pin oak to the Champion Tree Program to see if they can beat out a Lawrence pin oak for the largest pin oak in the state. And I'm really hoping they do because, you know, K-State and Lawrence. But yeah, so what happens with the Champion Tree Program is typically a volunteer who's affiliated with the Kansas Forest Service will come out and measure your tree, and they have a specific formula for determining the number of points that the tree is worth. There is the circumference at 4.5 feet above the ground. Typically, that is based off of a measurement in the arbor industry or tree service industry called diameter at breast height, which is just a way to determine, you know, the relative age of the tree and how long it's been in its particular spot. There's also the height of the tree in total, and then the spread of the canopy divided by 4. And that formula is those three measurements are all added together in order to determine the total number of points. And then it's compared against the champion tree that's the current champion tree in the state to figure out if it is the new champion tree. As far as southeastern Kansas goes, I believe we have 6 or 7 champion trees in the state. And Kansas has actually 2 national champion trees.
Oh, very nice.
One in Topeka and one in Olathe up in northeastern Kansas. So if you are interested, if you think you might have a champion tree of a particular species, you can get in touch with the Forest Service to submit a form as a nomination for your particular tree. And they will have someone come out and get a look at your tree to determine whether or not it is the champion. And for some people, if it's on private property, it might not be an agritourism thing. But if it's on, like, in parkland or some other source of public property, then, you know, it's a nice little thing to promote your area. Like, oh, come to Pittsburgh, Kansas. We have the largest pin oak in the state. So that is a fun little program that I recently just learned about as I was talking with this person submitting their pin oak in Pittsburgh.
Well, that's a really cool program. So maybe a chance for somebody in the Pittsburgh area to have the champion tree. And the other thing you did want to talk about was wild edibles.
Yeah, so I am an avid forager, and now is about the time if people who are listening are interested in going out and finding plants that might serve as a wild food source, to go out and get fall harvesting plants. In particular, when I came up with this topic, I was thinking about the pawpaw. Pawpaws are North America's largest native fruit, and no one knows what they are anymore. Or at least when I bring up, oh, I'm going pawpaw harvesting this weekend, people are like, what are pawpaws? And that hurts a little because they're really fun to go out and harvest. You find them as trees on riverbanks and other moist understory areas where they're growing in the shade of larger trees like oaks. They are clonal, so one seed that goes in the ground and then they start putting up clonal stems from a single seed, and it's what's known as a thicket or a patch. Based on, you know, that's what the song is based on, way down yonder in the pawpaw patch. And it was harvested for a long time over in on the eastern third of North America, particularly in Appalachia, as a wild food. And they are coming ripe right about now. They are all over the place. If you know what to look for, you will probably have seen pawpaws, particularly in like park areas. When I was living in Johnson County last year, I was able to harvest about 250 pounds of pawpaws a park right in the middle of Overland Park. So it wasn't like a wild park. It was just along Indian Creek, which is one of the biggest waterways in Johnson County. But yeah, they were just there by the Arboretum path that people walked on all the time, and no one was doing anything with them. So,
and you're just like, I'm going to get these.
Yeah. And one of the important things if you're ever harvesting on public property is to make sure you have the permission of the landowner or land maintainer. Typically for public parks, it's asking the manager of the park, like Parks and Rec director or something like that. For Kansas State Parks, I have looked into it. You can harvest any wild edibles on Kansas State Park land as long as you don't have to dig up the root, and you cannot sell them. You only harvest them for personal use. But I do know of a good pawpaw thicket in Crawford State Park, so I'll be getting fruit from those in a couple of weeks. And yeah, I would very much encourage people to look into different, especially people who own a large plot of land, plants that might be edible on their property. It's a very deep rabbit hole to get into once you start. But there are some good resources like the Peterson Field Guide to Edible Wild Plants. Typically, that is the foremost resource on wild edibles in the eastern half of the United States, which would include Kansas. And there are a lot of fun things to find out in the wild once you start looking. But there are a couple of safety tips that you need to keep in mind, too. In particular, never, ever eat something that you can't 100% identify. There are some poisonous lookalikes, including hemlock. Hemlock often gets mistaken for wild parsley or wild parsnip, and it is arguably the most poisonous plant in North America.
Ooh.
So if you aren't 100% sure on the identification of a particular plant, always play it safe and never eat it. One of the things that the extension office can help with is identification of those plants so that you can, you know, bring it in, ask if this is what you think it is, and then we can help identify it and you know what to look for in the future around your property or public property if you are able to go out and harvest some edibles. But yeah, pawpaw, very easy to find, easy to identify, and a nice little hidden treat in the state of Kansas.
What does a pawpaw look like for some people that may want to go looking for it?
Sure. So the best way that I can describe what a pawpaw looks like, it's going to be a tree with raindrop-shaped leaves that are about 9 inches wide at their widest. They're going to be really pretty large leaves. And then on the tree, you'll see typically clusters of three fruit at a time. The fruit's going to be about mango-sized, and it's going to be a pale green on the outside. They don't get very large. If they are ripe, they will fall off the tree with a kick, and that is how I was told by some other foragers to tell if a pawpaw is ripe, is by kicking the tree, and if they fall off the tree, they are ready to eat.
Mm-hmm.
They're not quite ripe if they don't fall off the tree, and one of the tricky things about pawpaws is they don't keep very long, and that's why, despite Kentucky's best efforts, there's not really a commercial market for pawpaws, because they bruise very easily, and they only keep for a couple of days after they're off the tree. But anywhere in understory, you likely will be able to find a pawpaw, at least one pawpaw tree. Although, it is questionable whether or not you'll find fruit, because pawpaws are notoriously hard to pollinate. They don't pollinate by bees like most other plants will. They pollinate by flies. And in Kentucky, where they are much braver and try to grow pawpaws commercially, farmers have to hang chicken carcasses off of the branches to in order to encourage as much pollination as possible by these flies. In the wild, oftentimes they are pollinated by wind, so you don't have to worry about dead animals around the pawpaw trees. But fruit can be very hit or miss depending on the year. So finding a thicket of pawpaw trees is the first step, and then beating out the raccoons for the fruit is the second step.
Because the raccoons will go after it real quick. Or as I like to call them, trash pandas. So,
yep.
So yeah. All right. And so that is what is going on with over there. So if anybody has any more questions about wild edibles and also the Champion Tree program, how can they get a hold of you?
They can call me at 620-724-8233, or they can email me at jr637@ksu.edu.
All right, and also joining us in studio this morning is Wendy Powell. Wendy, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Well, Wendy, we'll get fully into your subjects here coming up in the next segment. But if for people that are listening, what are you going to be talking about today?
Yeah, so we're on the tail end of Sericea control season, so I'm going to talk a little bit about that. And I've also got some information on what we can do with the leftover corn crop that's still in the field, how to utilize that for some forage. And then if we have time, we'll discuss some weaning strategies for those spring animals that are looking to be weaned here pretty soon.
All right, and we'll get to that subject on the other side of the break here. We're going to go ahead and take a break. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Greenside Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High in studio with you. And also in studio with us are Wendy Powell and Jesse Gilmore. And we talked to Jesse in the first part of the program. In the second part of the program, we're talking to Wendy this morning. And Wendy, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Kyle?
I am doing pretty good. So just to let everybody know, you said what you were going to talk about, but let's go ahead and get it started this morning.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention Sericea lespidus control this morning. We're kind of getting towards the tail end of the control season on that, and I know it's a huge problem across the Wildcat District. All of our counties have Sericea lespidus populations, and just so folks know, this is an invasive plant. It's on the list of Kansas noxious weeds, so that simply means that if you have it, it is your responsibility to help control it. So it's not something that you want to see in your pastures. It does have a chemical in it that will create problems for other desirable plants to grow in those areas. It's kind of like the eastern red cedar. It has this chemical that just prevents other plants from growing, and it takes a while for that to get out of the soil for other plants to come in. So it's just a bad deal all around, but not for everybody. A lot of research has been done on this legume. Legume simply means that it's a nitrogen fixer, so it does put a little bit of nitrogen back in the soil, but also for goats, it is a bit of a dewormer, a natural dewormer for goats. So that's another interesting fact about it. Lots of different aspects of each plant that we work with. But Cerisa lespidiza, like I said, is on our Kansas noxious weed list. So we do need to work on controlling it. And you've got a few options on that. If you want to control it this time of year, you can do fall burns on it for the next week or so, maybe even towards the last part of September. You're looking to reduce the adult plant vigor, and you'll also be removing the current seed population. So running a fall burn through there, and then possibly trying to put in a a cool season annual to provide some winter forage for you might could work, depending on that Cerisia population. So that's one option for you, fall burning. The other option is an herbicide. The active ingredient is called Metsulfuron, and that's marketed trade names Ally, Escort, Cimarron. There's probably a few others out there. And you want to get about a third of an ounce of product per acre. And you can do that on these Cerisia lespidiza plants through flowering. And I've seen some sources say up into frost, unless the plant is drought stressed. But you certainly want to get that on the plant, this Metsulfuron onto the plant before it declines too far to get that chemical down to the roots. There's also a few pre-emergent products out there. If you're looking to completely renovate pastures with a new warm season planting, you can do a pre-emergent there. But for cool season plants like fescue, these pre-emergent products are a little bit trickier. So if you're interested in that, please give me a call and we'll walk through your situation, make for sure that you have a good plan to work from there. So again, this is Cerisia lespidiza control. And you'll this time of year, you see it as a pretty tall plant, 5 feet or so. And it's got, some might call it a pretty purple, you know, Jesse and I are okay state, so anything purple is pretty. it's got a purple bloom on it that's kind of a lighter color. It's pretty easy to identify right now because of that flower, and it's a stem that comes right up and then it bushes out about halfway up the plant, so 2.5 feet or so, and then it just bushes out. I've seen it in ditches quite a bit, and it's just very prominent, and it's a bad dude for the most part. So if you've got that in your pastures, you certainly need to be looking out for it because it will overtake, and that's a big problem.
It's very invasive, basically, is what you're saying. It'll take over quickly.
Yes. Yeah. So my next topic, I've gotten a lot of questions recently on grazing corn stalks. So there's been quite a variable in corn harvest across our area, and a lot of folks are looking for some alternatives. Well, even if you do harvest a crop off of your fields, you're still left in those cornfields with quite a bit of stubble, a lot of leaf, stem, husk. And those are really great for grazing. So if you're able to fence that, even with electric fencing, then you can put some cattle out on it. Sometimes goats, it's going to depend on what gestation stage your animals are in, on how many you can put on those fields. But it's certainly a good grazing option for you. And there's a nice little calculator out of the University of Nebraska to calculate your stalking rate, because we don't want to remove more than half of the leaf and husk from the field. So we want to make for sure that the animals are still eating some high quality forage at the same time of preserving what is there. So if you're interested in grazing those corn stalks, certainly give me a holler. The other thing to keep in mind with grazing corn or Johnson grass or any other concerning grass like that is nitrates. So whenever some of these plants get stressed, they can accumulate nitrates, mostly in the lower parts of the plant, but depending on the concentration and the weather factors, it could get higher in the plant. And we've got a nice little quick field test that I can come out and I can split the stems on these plants, and we can test them for nitrates. This is not a foolproof test, and it certainly doesn't tell us the concentration of nitrates in these plants. It's kind of a pass-fail deal, kind of like when you were in PE as you're a kid, pass or fail, it's there or it's not. So we can run this test, and if it turns blue, then we need to send the samples off to the lab and find out the actual concentration. Every animal does have a tolerance level of nitrates, but it's certainly not something that we want to be messing with. And just, I've hear people talk about, you know, a sacrifice animal. Well, any animal these days is pretty valuable. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how many people are really having sacrifice animals in their herd. So I would discourage that practice. And just give me a call. I'm happy to come out and visit with you and run that test. It's very simple. Each plant takes less than a minute to take care of. So just give me a call. I can be reached at the Altamont office, 620-784-5337.
And you said, yeah, there was something else. I got lost my thought, but you had another subject that you wanted to bring up if we had a little more time, and we do have a little more time that you can bring up.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, we're looking towards weaning season right now as well for lots of different species. I'm most familiar with cattle, and I know that cattle are, by and large, the larger industry here in our area. But we're weaning lots of different species these days. And so some of the strategies among the different species, the traditional strategy is just to simply pull the young animal away from the dams and move them to a completely separate pasture, paddock, pen, whatever the case may be. And so that's our traditional method, and that's all well and good. It gets the job done. But there's a few other strategies that you can adopt. The fence line weaning strategy is one that is arguably the least stress method. So this is when you either move the cow or calf away and simply divide the two groups with a fence line. So it's got to be a good, strong fence line. And it's most ideal to have each area to be familiar to both the dams and the young so that they can find water, find feed, shade, etc. But research has shown that cattle that are fence line weaned tend to, they are less vocal by about 3 days. And they'll not lose as much weight in the stressful weaning process. So that's one option you can do. And if your forage is higher quality, then you might ought to think about leaving the calves in the pasture and pulling the cows into a paddock or a dry lot and supplementing their feed rather than pulling the calves into a dry lot to an area where they might be a bit more stressed and more bacteria might be in the soil and just create a lot more stress to lead to disease or weight loss. Another strategy that is much less popular, but simply because it is arguably newer. So there's a lot of different devices that you can put temporarily in the nose. So I'm sure, Kyle, that you've seen a bull ring, mm-hmm. you know, in the nose of a bull. Well, a lot of times those are permanent. And these devices are temporary that we're talking about with calves, and they simply are applied to the nose and they stay there, but they have different mechanisms for preventing that calf from nursing the cow. So some of them have points on them, and it's simply uncomfortable for the cow to be nursed by this calf, so she's not going to allow it. But applying these devices, anti-nursing devices, we'll call them today, will kind of stop the calf from nursing, and the cow will start drying up a little bit. The calf will get used to the cow being there but not nursing necessarily. So that kind of starts the weaning process. And then you can do that fence line wean or the traditional wean. Either way, it's a little less stressful than the traditional method. There's a lot of different devices out there, and some of them have shown a little bit more effective. Some of them are a little bit more abrasive when applied to the nose, and depending on how long you leave them on there, You certainly can't do it more than 7 days because they'll learn to flip that device up, and then the spikes will be towards the calf rather than the cow. So about 3 days is your target there to use those, and then to pull the calves out of the pasture with the cows, or pull the cows out of the pasture with the calves, either way. So lots of different options there to decrease some of that stress and possible weight loss and alleviate some of that pressure that comes with weaning season.
All right. So, again, some great advice there. Like you said, if anybody wants to contact you about that or anything you've talked about this morning.
Yeah, you can reach me at the Altamont office. That number is 620-784-5337. And my email goes directly to my phone, so I'm much more active on that. Wendy, W-E-N-D-I-E, Powell, P as in Paul, O-W-E-L-L at KSU.edu. So feel free to get a hold of me. I'd love to work with producers on their grazing plans and weed control options, lots of different avenues I can help out.
All right. Lots of great information from both of you guys today. And, of course, Jesse, before we get out of here, if anybody does have any question about pawpaws or basically anything in your field, how can they get a hold of you again?
Call me at the Girard office at 620-724-8233. Or email me at jr637@ksu.edu.
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming in today. Really do appreciate it. Again, you guys always bring a lot of great information, and we'd love to see you guys every week. And we'll see you guys back again next week.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take a break. It's time for Open Line right after this break. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this hump day.